My name is Simon Locke. I'm Vice President of the Foreign Press Association. And today, we're actually changing things around a little bit with the breaking news around Boris Johnson. So I'm actually going to have a conversation with our esteemed President of the Foreign Press Association, who normally does all the interviewing, Ian Williams. Now, Ian actually has a long history with Boris Johnson and the Labour Party and all sorts of different things that we'll get into. And so actually has got some different perspective about what's going on that, will be hopefully valuable and insightful and also interesting. So Ian, can you share a little bit of the historical context that you've got around Boris Johnson?
Well, Boris Johnson is a history in himself. Boris Johnson was actually born in America, in New York, which not many people remember. So we can blame the United States for him.
But so he shares a little bit of the cultural thing of Churchillian, right?
Yes. But the thing about Boris is that he is very much a product of the British class system, which is very difficult to explain to Americans. Because it's not just money. Boris is he went to Eton, he went to Oxbridge, and this means that he can get away with things that the rest of us can't. He will get up there and he will be preposterous, he will be a buffoon, and it's regarded as just, boys will be boys. So he's got away with fathering illegitimate children left, right, and center, having mistresses in his club at Eton. They used to go around blowing up, not blowing up, but trashing restaurants and bars. He says the most outrageous things. He's been completely racist. He says the Queen likes the Commonwealth because it gives the occasion to go around the world and smile at grinning pickaninnies and their children. I mean, it's outrageous what he's said and done. Nobody else would, but he's British upper class, and they're allowed these eccentricities that wouldn't be allowed for lesser folks. Well, for example, Jeremy Corbyn. he was in the media. He was paid to invent stories. One of his first editors, Max Hastings, who is a very renowned British journalist, basically said, as soon as he was elected, this man should not be elected to any office. He's an untrustworthy liar and dissimulator. And he, very explicit, look up Max Hastings and Boris Johnson, and you see the history of the following years all written, presaged by Max Hastings, who was a conservative journalist, but an honest one, which is possible.
So, it must have been with, and I think Boris Johnson kind of admitted this today, that this was a painful decision after all of the escapes that he's kind of managed from previous scandals and the ability just to somehow or other, get his way to the top despite everything that has actually happened in the past. So this is kind of a pretty painful comeuppance for him, but it did seem like he felt as though that he might get through this one. Why do you think, we got to this point and we're going, okay, Boris, him actually saying, someone else is going to have to take her over as leader?
Well, it's only when his own supporters realized that he was a liability and they're going to win their seats in the House of Commons at the next election. And I'd always said that from the beginning. The way that they will happen is when the Conservative Party decides he's going to lose the next election, they'll go to a country house and they'll pick short straws and Boris will be carried out with a knife in his back. Well, this one, because he's insisted on staying, the knives are in his front, a lot of them. He's like a pincushion. I mean, they all resigned. And I don't even think it was a conspiracy so much as a mob rushing for the doors, because he really was outrageous what he's got away with. I mean, there are limits to how many lies you can tell in public. Politicians tell lies, it's part of their profession. But he just came out with whopper after whopper, and they were patent lies, like a kid standing behind a curtain who can't believe that you found him because you can see his feet there. You couldn't see me, what is that? And all those old trite phrases come up. I mean, from Winnie the Pooh, he's Tigger, who got his bounce back at regular intervals. You know, with a leap and a bound, he was free from whatever trite attempt there was to get him. But, and I think this is not to be discounted, think of Rasputin. He'll be back. He's unputdownable. He's shameless. In a year or so, somebody is going to try to recall him, and he is going to appear, and he will find followers because he's just so... Here they say Teflon quoted, but it's not Teflon, it's grease. Everything just runs off him.
Well, you know, journalists in the US, or as people think about what's going on, you know, there's a reasonable question to ask, and I actually heard this in one of the commentaries today, which was the question of, does this really matter? You know, how much of a difference does Boris Johnson resigning make, you know, in the world overall? Is there going to be a difference?
I think there's a sort of cumulative effect. For a start, his effect in Britain is that he actually has made the Conservative Party electable, which is why they all resigned, because he is facing the most ineffectual opposition in Britain for many years. Keir Starmer's poll ratings are abysmal. Keir Starmer has spent the last several years purging his opponents from the Labour Party and creating another reality. He's trashed his own party in the cause of defeating the previous incumbent, Jeremy Corbyn. And, you know, frankly, he's an ineffectual, onanistic-looking candidate who ain't going to get places. He's going to lose the next election if he's there. He's the only person who could lose the next election against Boris. But he was on the verge of doing it. Boris, there might have been some type of coalition possible between Labour and the Liberal Democrats under other circumstances. But it really depends on whether the Conservatives pick a plausible candidate for the next election. The only saving grace here is both the Labour and the Conservative front benches are, they look like Fraggle Rock on a bad day. They're caricatures of themselves. They're very difficult to take seriously. And both of them, it's the same reason. They've winnowed out anybody who challenged the leadership. They've carefully and sedulously weeded out the independent-minded and people with any independent backing and standing to make sure that they're all creatures of the leadership. And it's not good for parliamentary politics. And parliamentary politics in Britain is at an abysmal state. You know, the idea of being elected to parliament and being an independent person is almost impossible now. It's, you know, at one point and to the not distant past, the backbenchers in Parliament were known for the eccentricities. They were personalities. They were sort of revered and reviled throughout the public. Most people would scratch their heads to say, who is that? Who? When? Now? I mean, they really are nonentities who were whipped in for the votes and then whipped out again afterwards. Very little to offer the public. And I think the public realizes that.
You know, it's interesting. He has been the Teflon man. There have been many times when he has said what were blatant lies, and then sort of subsequently, when caught in them, said, "Oh, you know, I didn't necessarily know or denied or various forms of that type of discussion." And yet this time, you know, he's caught in the lie essentially that he wasn't briefed about the inappropriate sexual proclivities of another member of parliament that he chose to be, you know, I can't remember the specific his specific title, but you know, Chris Pincher, right?
Pincher, so, yes.
So he is it caught in this moment of saying, I didn't know about his track record. And then someone says, well, actually he was told. And then it's like, I forgot. And we look at it and say, wow, you know, Why this time? Because this is not the first time, right?
Yeah, but this makes him almost endearing. I mean, one of the things is he is not at all censorious. The old saw about let who is without sin cast the first stone. Boris is in no position to cast stone at our people for their sex lives. He's right. Got a string of illegitimate children. He's got a string of adulteries. He's, you know, I mean, he's condoned it in his cabinet. He's condoned lying. I mean, the biggest lie was, of course, about Brexit. He did not want to win the Brexit vote. He used this as a means to become the parliament, to become the leader of the Conservative Party. He campaigned for Brexit and was very thankful. He wasn't thankful it won. He was petrified when it won because he had no contingency plans for winning. He knew it was a nonsense plan, but it was just an appeal to chauvinism in a big way, to xenophobia and chauvinism in the British public. He had no economic backup plan. And his government since then has ricocheted from Northern Ireland to the, you mean the stuff to the continent goes through Dover on the ferry? This was a revelation. I mean, these people had no preparation at all. I mean, they were absolute amateurs who were mouthing off slogans, populist slogans to the sort of the taproom squires in the countryside. And of course, to the working class people in the famous Red Walls, who were totally disgruntled with the Conservatives and the Labour Party, because both of those parties have been engaged on ignoring them and dissing them for the previous 20 years. A bit, yeah, like here, really.
Yeah, well, I was going to go there because it's pretty clear, and I've had conversations with my own, you know, family members actually about this, to go, somehow or other, despite the known mendacity of Boris Johnson and the campaigns, what they've gone through, he continued to attract a strong degree of support, and almost like a pop, you know, people would go, well, you know, ignore those things, because, you know, as one I think is the party basically said, you know, he gets the big decisions right. You know, there are some interesting parallels between what's been going on in the US in terms of other political leaders. You know, what is Boris Johnson, the fact that he became prime minister and then ultimately has resigned, you know, say about, you know, popular support? And you know, should we be thinking that somehow or other, you know, well, this is kind of the end of the populists, because now we've lost Trump and now we lost Johnson? Or should we be careful?
I don't think we've lost them. I mean, they're both there like Rasputin. They're going to crawl up from under the ice, no matter how much cyanide and how many knives you stick in them. They're going to come back. And one of the reasons is they represent an idea. And I think this is something that's a sort of anti-Marxist view of history. It's quite clear that voters aren't just swayed by direct economics. It's not just how much money you can put in their pocket, but ideas, if I may quote Chairman Mao, have a material force. And the idea that them foreigners are coming over here and taking our jobs and living on the dole, a self-contradictory idea, is something that has huge resonance in almost all the countries in Europe. It's not just the Anglo-Saxons are on this one. Some variant of that idea is infesting and infecting throughout Northern Europe. And it's helped because most of these governments have, since Ronald Reagan's time, stopped providing the economic and welfare benefits that they used to these people. So they've only got the idea to play with, the idea, you know, the idea of racism, make America great again, waving Union Jacks in Britain, Hungary looking back to its magnificent past when there were the marauding hordes on the plains of Central Asia. I mean, it's this type of nostalgia which makes up for the present poor state of the country, which I think most people think there's not much they can do about, because for the last 30 years, we've been told there's nothing we can do about it. It's the laws of economics unfolding. You're in the gutter because you deserve to be in the gutter because you didn't work hard enough. And it's not the government's job to get you out the gutter or even to clean the gutter occasionally, because it's your job. You're there, you know, while you're in the gutter, lick.
So there's right now, it seems to be, it's not totally clear about, I think Johnson said he's basically will be there on an interim period until a new leader is elected. Now, you know, I've seen examples where, you know, that could be a 6-week period, or there could be changes made into the Conservative Party rules to go, well, we want a leader much more quickly than that. What's your perspective on, you know, what's a realistic outcome? And if Boris Johnson continues for an extended period of time, you know, does that matter? Will there be any consequences that actually result from that?
Well, if things get too disastrous, as I understand it, and if one of the contenders has a majority in the Conservative Party, they can go to Buckingham Palace and say, hey up, Mrs. Windsor, he's got to go. And this is our candidate. The British public won't be involved in this vote, remember. The British will not vote for who the Prime Minister is. It'll be a coterie of Conservative politicians in consultation with an unelected monarch who traces their ancestry back to Woden, the god. I mean, people forget that. The British royal family tree goes back to Woden, after whom Wednesday is named, in case you'd forgotten. It's another piece of triviality. But no, I mean, I think it will be there. One of the other things that did come up was what effect it would have on Ukraine. And, you know, foreign countries often have different perceptions of the leaders. Like, most Americans thought that Margaret Thatcher was the Iron Lady and deeply loved, and they couldn't quite understand where people were having bonfires and fireworks when she died in much of the Britain that she trashed. The folk memories were deep. When I went to Kosovo, to Pristina, they had statues to George W. Bush and Tony Blair, which I found a trifle odd. They were not my heroes, but I could see why they were theirs. And now in Ukraine, of course, they think Boris Johnson is their best friend because he's blustered and shouted about it. They overlooked the fact that he was in the hock with Russian oligarchs and actually put one of them, Liebed, into the House of Lords, God help us, Lord Liebed. I mean, you know, all of that is forgotten, but because he pranced around and, you know, did provide effectual support to Ukraine, for which I support him, by the way, because I don't believe in the ad hominem or ad homines arguments of people that everything that men do all the good that men do should be buried with them. He did do some good in Ukraine. He was strong on it, certainly compared with the German rulers, for example. I'll give Boris a Deutschmark or two for that, ex-Deutschmark, euro, thanks to Boris. So it's difficult to know where it's going to go. And there are so many, there's much more in it than Boris's personality or the personality who ever comes. I mean, Britain is wreathed with railway strikes at the moment. And it appears, according to the British press, that the leader of the Rail Workers Union, which used to be my union, by the way, is one of the most popular figures in Britain, because he gets up there and when they ask him a question, you don't see the machination. What does this person want me to say? What can I say that will make this person a supporter? Mick Lynch goes straight in and says, this is what I want to tell you. And people appreciate that. It's the most unpolitical. Jeremy Corbyn used to do that, by the way, and he was appreciated for it. Despite, you know, he remained amazingly popular despite 100% across the board hatred from all of the media, down to lies and distortions. And Boris Johnson had the other. I mean, he was getting support from across the media despite all of his lies and distortions. So it's that the media do not come out of this very well at all. And, you know, foreign reporters in particular, tend to look at the places they're covering through their own prisms, and they really should take a step backwards and check not just the taxi driver on the way from Heathrow into Westminster, but what the rest of the people want. They should, you know, go for a toodle around Bradford and Manchester and Liverpool.
Well, here's my last last question, so we can wrap this up, which would be, so you know, I think I mentioned a little while ago the idea of be careful what you wish for. You know, just because, so there's a change. So Boris Johnson is out, and obviously in the US, if, you know, the president would be out, there would be like, oh, what are the consequences? But it's a prime minister in the parliamentary system. What realistically, you know, does that mean that we should be careful for what we wish for, that those people who've been, you know, looking at getting Boris out for some period of time, because are the next round of politicians who are up for leader, you know, the likely lads or the likely lasses?
Oh, they're pathetic. and that's really the dilemma. Of course it was right to call for Boris's resignation. Of course he was guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors in all sorts of ways. But at the same time, you know, how expedient can you be? You say this is the office of the prime minister. He's the Queen's chief minister. So we have to judge that on his suitability or otherwise. Similar with the president. You can't look at the president of the USA and say, well, you know, they've got to be perfect. We have to work out what's better. And you get some fringes of this with the people who have never forgiven anybody for not supporting Hillary in the last presidential election. Now, the purpose is to elect the person that you think represents you. And unfortunately, in the US, that's even more difficult than in Britain, because in undemocratic as it is, the idea of a small coterie of Tory MPs who were at least elected themselves is every bit as democratic as an electoral college packed with what successions of judges and lobbyists have put in.
Well, look, is there one final takeaway or final recollection or something that you will hold in your mind that will be forever like burned in your memory about Boris Johnson and how he will be remembered for you and by the British public?
I was in London doing press work for the London Olympics, and I saw the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, on the high wire, stuck. And to see this beefy character looking like a zeppelin stuck in the air, that will be stuck in my mind. That will be Boris. And it's an entirely apposite image, I think. I got to say, he kept his aplomb. He was waving flags around with, you know, Union Jacks. So, you know, here he is, ineffectual, bloated, hanging in midair. That's Boris. That describes his whole reign.
Well, he's come to the end of the wire for at least this iteration. So with that,
he'll be back.
he'll be back. With that, Ian Williams, President of the FPA, thanks very much indeed. And as I said, I'm Simon Locke, Vice President of the FPA. We welcome your support. We welcome suggestions and contributions and thoughts on additional topics that you would like us to talk about and cover. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
We're quite prepared to excoriate other non-Anglo countries' prime ministers, yes, and presidents as well. We're open-minded about this.
Thanks, Ian.
Bye.